This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.
You're listening to the best of Johanna James and Noel Clarke on FUBAR Radio.
Yes! It's background too!
Woo!
Johanna James, I am joined this week by Joe Tosca.
Hello.
Right, we've got our third guest in the studio. Thank you so much for joining us. We're joined by Dion Walker and George Aponsa. Did I say that right? Yay! Who were the writers and directors of a brand new documentary called The Hard Stop. So, welcome.
Filmmakers, not. So, one director, I'm the producer.
I thought you wrote it, sorry. We've been got my...
You've been pranked.
I've been pranked.
Worst prank ever.
Prank! Oh, so you produced and directed. Okay. And could we let sort of our audience and listeners know a little bit about what it's about? Because obviously you guys are going to know. You're going to sell it way better than...
It's about the man who was killed in 2011 by police, which sparked the UK riots,
mm-hmm.
which, as we know, started in London, North London, Tottenham.
Mark Duggan.
Spread across London and other cities of the UK. And that man was, as you said correctly, his name was Mark Duggan. And our film follows two of his childhood friends following... Mark's death and following their lives, you know, as they deal with bereavement, imprisonment, unemployment, and, you know, just the whole fallout from those events that affected so many people in 2011.
Yeah, that was crazy times. That was one of the only times I've ever felt actually scared in London as a Londoner living here. That night, it had like a very frantic... I was very scared, and for the first time, because normally I felt like we have a system in place, like police and army and things like that, too, and I felt not on their side, and I felt like the police weren't on the protecting, and I just felt very vulnerable.
How close were you?
Very close. So I was at the time working on a Noel Clarke film, and we were filming in West London, and I drove home through Peckham, through Lewisham. I lived in Lewisham, so it was going on everywhere. Like, I went outside my house down to Catford, and there was people looting, smashing things. There was riot police vans, but the police weren't doing anything. So I just felt like if something kicked off, the police weren't then going to step in, and it was all kind of every man for himself. Energy of that night, it was very, very terrifying. So what inspired you to like fully produce this and
well, in fact, when the riots kicked off, we were in Copenhagen at a Prince concert.
Oh.
And I think so we arrived in London like 2 days late, the third day, because riots went on for over 4 days. And it was all over the news, and we thought, well, you know, instead of watching it via the news, we should really just go out and see what was happening. And I think it started there in a sense. We felt it was quite important to have a look at where this was coming from in terms of why this is happening now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we just, I think it was, as Londoners, you know, we wanted to really find out something about the man himself, the humanity, and you know, the life that was lost, because following the riots, I think that kind of got lost a little bit in the mix. And if you remember in the media, there was a lot of, you know, about all the damage that had been done to property and about various people who maybe ran into Foot Locker or somewhere to, you know, grab a pair of free trainers, and it's somewhat detracted from you know, what actually
the
happened.
The loss of life.
The loss of life and the man himself and this community in Tottenham who have a history of these incidents involving, you know, deaths in police custody or following police contact, which actually goes back to 1985 and the original Broadwater Farm riot, all of which is chronicled in our film, The Hard Stop.
Mm. And I think it's very interesting that you guys sort of start the film onwards from where the media stopped, basically, because they were mainly concentrated on the riots. And as I was saying to Joe earlier, that I was in Channel 4, made a docudrama about the events of that night, but entirely focused on the rioting and the looting and whatnot. And that was like the second TV movie that I was in, but it was more the story of how the rioting affected people rather than the actual thing that sparked the riot. And I remember as well seeing in the media, the photo that they used for Mark, they cropped it. And I remember seeing on the... Did you see this?
I think I know what you mean, yeah.
So they cropped a photo... and they sort of sold it in when actually if you move the photo,
yeah,
the uncropped version of the photo, he was next to a grave.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Yeah. You know, they cropped the photo and it was the image of Mark that went out in many media images following the
riots.
It was
his main photo,
and
it
seemed to portray this look of a scowling sort of gangster type figure,
kind of roadman.
When
in fact,
when you see the whole uncropped picture, it's actually he's actually holding a placard, and it's in commemoration of his child, his daughter who died, I think age one, and it says to my daughter with love, and he's actually at a gravesite.
So of course,
and
he's
the image you're looking at is of a man in bereavement.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
and they've just cropped that to make him look, well. They if you put him in the media like that, then you just what you make of it.
That was one of the first times that I ever totally saw how much that the media can spin something, or literally just cropping a photo. The context of it is so different, and it massively changed my mind. So I was very thankful to whoever it was that put the uncropped photo around the internet. So
definitely.
I think this documentary is going to be hugely eye opening for people who may not know the whole story.
This is the uncropped version.
It's the uncropped story.
But very much sort of, told through the story of his childhood friends, who are very much a reflection of him, who grew up with him, and who, as far as they were concerned, they were part of an extended family together.
And was it hard to put together, were Mark's friends, did they really want to be part of it, or was it quite hard to track them down? What was that story?
They really wanted to be part of it, but when we first began filming with them, obviously they had every reason to be somewhat distrustful of the media for the reasons we've just been discussing, because they're just the degree to which Mark was being misrepresented in the media, to the degree to which he was misrepresented from the very outset. Because if you remember, the first media report was that there was a shootout, that there was an actual exchange of gunfire on Ferry Road, which is actually ridiculous. Yeah. And 2 days later, that was retracted. He never had a gun. There was not, and in fact, what transpired is one police officer had accidentally shot another police officer who, but fortunately, was saved by his own police radio. Mm. So I think that's might have been part of the confusion. But the point was that the media said that Mark had opened fire on the police. And of course, even though you retract that 2 days later, it's already gone out as a story and sort of lodged in people's minds.
Yeah, it's not like everyone that read that story is going to
see the retraction. Yeah, exactly.
Precisely.
Yeah, but just to point out, the media, that was the information they received. So it didn't start with the media.
Yeah, they didn't invent that.
Exactly. It was received, I think, through the police IPCC. So in defence of the media a bit.
Mm. Yeah, let's be fair enough. Not every person in the media is going to crop everything. And exactly. There are some very honest journalism.
Yeah, FUBAR Radio is very, very good.
FUBAR, yeah.
They're good.
But,
Guardian.
So where is this, the documentary, is it going to be, where is it platform? Where can people access this and see it?
Right, so it's actually came out on Netflix today.
Oh, okay.
And so,
well, that's good. We're talking about Netflix.
Yeah. And so, and also, we must mention, we've been nominated for Best Documentary, BIFA Awards, and Evening Standards.
Oh, exciting.
And so, that's quite something. I mean, I think it means that hopefully we'll get the message out to a wider public, because it's not being shown on terrestrial television. So this idea, let's hope it being on Netflix in the UK will get the message out.
That's a strong platform. Mm-hmm. And also, I think that this whole subject, it can translate to our sort of our friends over in America. Because it's a big thing this year. It's been about police brutality and unfairness, and there's a lot of stuff going around the internet about that. And it's really picking up a strong momentum.
Definitely.
So I think that it's important. I think it would resonate with a lot of people in America if they got to have access to this documentary.
Yeah, I mean, I think we always pitch the narrative as such, where it's a local, it's local, it's Tottenham, it's London, but at the same time, it's a transnational story, which everyone, which will resonate with people in America. We've shown it in Cairo, in Egypt. We've shown it in Amsterdam. And we've shown it in festivals in America. So it should resonate. It's a big message.
No, it's really cool. And have you got any other, now that this one is sort of wrapped and on its way off around the internet, have you got any other projects that you're looking to go forward with?
Yes.
Yeah. I saw Cheek smiles there. I was like, yeah, we have.
Yes, we do.
What do you want to do next?
Well, I don't really want to say too much about it, but, you know, I'm looking at maybe doing something more sort of, you know, fictional, but very much sort of with a documentary heart. Mm-hmm. So something that, I guess springs off a real story or real situation.
Mm-hmm.
But, this time using, a script and actors and that sort of thing.
You have two of the best in the room right now.
Ready.
Noel isn't here. It's just quiet.
Noel's off. I think that's interesting to play on. Well, a lot of, I've seen a lot of things be mockumentary, but they don't have to be comedy, but mockumentary style, and using that as a way of, there's a lot of people who do nothing. I think it's called, which is on Netflix as well. It's a fictional documentary series. And I think that is, I really like that genre.
It's such a cool style, isn't
it? It's like
it's
the,
just
office.
The Office.
Yeah, The Office. It's kind of fictional documentary.
Yeah. But it doesn't have to, exactly. It doesn't have to be comedy. It could be anything you want, but it's because it's a scripted fictional bit, but it's in a documentary style. It adds, I don't know, it adds such a
And
cool
it's very, it's a cost effective way.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look odd. Well, actually, the internet's possibly the best format for that, actually. It's really, very, very good. Oh, that's exciting. Okay, I can see there's, like, things in the works. So is that looking next year you're going to be going full hog with that?
Definitely.
Cool.
The road's deep, his best friend is his bucky, that's unlucky for some. Especially when he's always out on the prowl for fresh meat. Fresh peeps to run up to him with his gun. Say, Wagwan, my son, what's going on here? Who in the elders that where? Think he is over there. Dropping off a Chung Ting in his passenger chair. Eyeballing man with his arrogant stare. That can't run, no, while I breathe air. And to find it out before we let him leave air, leave air. Come around my man, I beware, cause I'm about to be around that somewhere. They shoot loops and so is troops, dudes with screws loose, that'll do anything for the loot. Like get a bigger man move, or pull the trigger and shoot, thinking, who the fuck you think you try to test? You get messed, best get your bulletproof vest. Blah, who you think you try to push? Like I'm gonna keep shush, you must think I'm a puss. Come now, who you try to be? Tryna go on like your head, you tryna go on like your feet. Nah, fuck it, this is the beat. Car window gets smashed and this man gets back for acting flash. No manner on him like a rash for the cash. Out to take everything but his gash. When the match goes off and his leg makes blood splash on the dashboard, that's raw. They left him with a smash jaw on top of broken up his ride and popping guy. Crash course, dummies what he's left like. Shining on his left eye because he flex like he can fuck on next guys. Vex guys, the hex guys, if you disrespect guys. If you ever want a man, brown bread, check guys. Set light, burn chichi man, get right. Now when the crew get their set tight, these fucking bubbles should've known. The trouble gets high. On the double, there's a struggle, then you get life. If you're lucky in the buck, you don't tech life. Make you just another dead try. Who the fuck you think you try? Yes, you get messed. Best get your bulletproof vest. Blah, who you think you try? Push like I'm gonna keep shush. You must think I'm a puss. Come now, who you try be? Tryna go on like your head, be tryna go on like your feet. Nah, fuck it, this is the beat. It started in the end and it will end in the street. Time to splurge, desert the crime scene. One's got the man's wallet, the other is timepiece. But the white geese, the one with the piece, almost left it on the street to get found by police. He's slipping blood, he just left the guy dripping blood. It's lucky that he had his mitts and gloves, else trust to get him on his prints. Well, you know what then, good job he thought to think before he acted, backed it, macked it. Went full out and jacked it, smacked it, smashed it. Left the guy dry, looking like someone crashed it. Show the motherfucker what'll happen if you flash it, cause these streets are infested with rude boys, time to run around in crew boys and do boys, straight up cut the fuck up and shoot boys, we're trying to act like they're true boys. Who the fuck you think you're trying to test, this could get messed, best get your bulletproof vest. Blah, who you think you're trying to push, like I'm gonna keep shush, you must think I'm a puss. Come now, who you trying to be, trying to go on like you're heavy, trying to go on like you're deep. Nah, fuck it, this is beef, it started in the ends and it will end in the street. Who the fuck you think you're trying to test, this could get messed, best get your bulletproof vest. Blah, who you think you're trying to push, like I'm gonna keep shush, you must think I'm a puss. Come now, who you trying to be, trying to go on like you're heavy, trying to go on like you're deep. Nah, fuck it, this is beef, it started in the ends and it will end in the street.
The best of Johanna James and Noel Clark on FUBAR Radio.
We've got in the studio, well, not in the studio, actually.
Who have we got, Jo?
We are going to be talking to the writers of a new film called I Am Not a Serial Killer, which is like a dark comedy slash. It's like a kind of all round weird new
film. That's good. Weird is good. That's good. Weird is good.
Are they on the line? They're on the line. Brilliant. Okay, we're going to try. We're always at the mercy of like technology at the moment. And I'm like, is it going to work? Are they going to get cut off? Are they here with us or not? So we'll just see in a moment. But it's got some pretty cool cast members, actually. It's got Christopher Lloyd, who plays the duck in Back to the Future.
Yeah, I thought you said duck.
He plays the duck.
That famous duck.
Marty's your kids, Marty.
Hello. Are you with us?
Hello, hiya. Hello. Can you hear me?
Oh, we can indeed. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much.
How's it going?
For your time. So is this Christopher and Billy?
Yeah, this is Billy here. Hiya.
Oh, hi, Billy. Hi. So we were just trying to explain to the audience about what I Am Not a Serial Killer is about, the movie. I'm sure you will do it way better.
Well, I would have put a duck in it if you'd said it earlier. That's a great idea.
That is the $100 billion idea, that is. Pop a duck in it.
There's a duck. Next film, next movie.
Absolutely.
I am a serial killer.
So how did it come up? So you wrote, did you write the concept?
No, it comes from a book, actually, an American book
of
the same name. So Chris and me adapted it and then I directed it. So, yeah, cool. It's good fun.
Oh, amazing. And how did it sort of get, because I always find it fascinating, like the story behind how a movie gets made, because it is never as easy as, you know, oh, let's just make a movie.
Yeah, I'll see you in a few months. There it is on the screen.
Yeah, it's always such a fight. It's a testament.
Oh, yeah, there's tons of fights. I mean, it seemed pretty easy at first because the book was amazing and, it, you know, Chris and me had great fun adapting it. And then it took another 6 years to get financed. So it's the usual independent film
That's
story.
That's quite,
you know,
a long time.
Yeah, which wasn't a lot of fun.
But worth it a bit.
Yeah, you know, looking back at it, definitely. I mean, God, if the film had turned out to be rubbish, then no, it wouldn't have been worth it.
that's the risk,
you know. But yeah, no, we're really happy with it. And it was a great adventure. Like, we shot it in Minnesota, and, like, the temperature was, like, minus 20 the whole time, so that was really cool.
Oh, that'd be fun.
That. Yeah.
Nice.
Frostbite.
Well, it was nice not shooting in the rain for once, you know. Doing a film in America is just something different about it, and that was just, that was brilliant.
And, well, there's a big buzz going on about this film, because it was in the BFI Festival.
That's right, yeah, which is confirmed that, yeah.
And South by Southwest Film Festival. And when are we able to see it?
Right, it's coming out in, as they say, selected cinemas next Friday.
Okay.
The 9th, I think, if my dates are right. So in the UK and in Ireland. So I know it's on, like, they're still confirming the date or the cinemas, but it's definitely on in the Picture House Central in London. And then there's a few around Ireland as well. And we should be finding out more, I think, on Monday. So it's not a massive release. There's a little film opening a few days later, something Rogue something or other. I don't know, it's a tiny film.
Some
Kidney film.
Little Rogue One, maybe.
So that's going to take up most of cinemas, I think. But yeah, no, we're delighted and it's getting great reviews and everything, so it's really good.
So, like, story theme-wise, just to give people a little bit of an insight, it's about a 17-year-old boy who... He's a bit obsessed. He's got a bit of a morbid curiosity about serial killers.
Yeah.
And he sort of discovers, is it by accident, he discovers potentially a real serial killer?
Well, you see, his mum runs the town mortuary, so he's always embalming bodies with his mum and his aunt, which is not the most healthy thing for him to do. And then he realizes from the when the murder victims are delivered by the coroner into the thing, he's the first person to spot that this could be a serial killer at work. So he's kind of like a teenage
detective.
Sherlock Holmes who
yeah.
investigates it, you know.
Yeah, the other thing about him, though, is that he's clinically diagnosed as a sociopath. So he's afraid of becoming a serial killer one day himself anyway. And then this happens, which is both the most interesting thing that could happen to him and also one of the worst things because he finds it so engaging and enthralling.
Yeah, I mean, I love psychology and
it's amazing.
Anything to do with sort of what why our brains work a certain way or don't work a certain way.
I love the whole concept of the just why we dream. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like what's going on in their heads? I don't understand.
That's true. That's very true. Yeah, yeah.
So this is and the cast wise, you guys really like landed on your feet with the cast for this. It's got Max Records. He was the was he the boy from Where the Wild Things Are?
That's him. He was Max in Where the Wild Things Are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's like the film is on his shoulders because he's in every scene, and you know it was a real stamina job as much as anything. But he's just brilliant in it, absolutely brilliant.
Amazing.
He's kind of all grown up now, you know, as a 17-year-old. And then, of course, you mentioned the duck earlier on.
Duck
Brown.
Duck Brown.
He was great, and it's kind of him playing against type as well because he's it's a very quiet. Performance. It's not the kind of more cartoony like Adam's Family, you know,
that we would
which are brilliant. But this is a really interesting side of Christopher Lloyd. He's really very different in this, you know.
That's cool. I like a bit of variety.
I'm a huge fan of Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah,
love him, love him.
He's a lovely man as well. He was like, you know, we had him out in like it's a low budget film. We had him out in the snow in the middle of the night and everything, and you know, awful conditions. And he didn't complain once. He was
what
such a
true
perfect gentleman.
That's
absolutely
good,
a real pro.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I love hearing that, especially when big stars, like I hear that like Tom Hanks and people like that are just so down
genuine,
to earth.
So genuine, yeah. I love that.
I love those stories. So, I like him even more now. And so sort of, were you guys around for a lot of the production then? So you were sort of hands-on?
Yeah, well, I directed it and then Chris came out to be on the shoot as well. So we gave Chris loads of jobs to do, which was brilliant because we were a tiny crew. Yeah, I mean, Chris, you can talk about it a bit. You arrived in the middle of it, really.
Yeah, I came out for the last 2 weeks or so, and by then the guys had really been at it for a while. I didn't get to meet Chris Floyd on set because he was only, you know, they got his stuff out of the way first.
Oh, okay.
But I met him, you know, at screenings and things.
Mm-hmm.
It was great experience going out on the shoot because it was just so scrappy. Everyone was just really pitching in and just giving it their all and helping to make this thing come to life after, you know, almost seven years now.
It's a long, long time.
It was my first time on set. You know, it was cold, it was hard, but it was so rewarding seeing these things come to life.
Sounds like a good vibe on set as well. That's all it helps.
It was, yeah.
And did anything sort of not go to plan? It's always my favourite thing to ask behind the scenes. Was there anything...
Everything didn't go to plan, but like there was funny bits. We were mostly shooting up near the Canadian border in a small mining town, and then we had to do 5 days down in Minneapolis. And we'd forgotten we had kind of the freedom of the town up there. The town mayor, everybody, you know, if we wanted to shut off roads, the mayor got the police out first. Then down in Minneapolis, you're back in a big city, and we went. It started snowing on one of our day off, so we went out shooting. Without permits or anything, just because, you know, we had Max who stayed in the houses and we all just jumped in the van and went out. And we got pulled over by the police and asked if we'd permits and everything. And it was a really dicey moment because we didn't have anything.
Absolute
and in the end, I kind of talked around saying, look, we're only doing some tests for a film that's going to be happening later and all this. And we all got back in the van and we're all just driving off and everybody's really nervous in the van. When the same cop car, one of those big SUVs, pulls up behind us again, flashes the lights, pulls up. And we're like, what is it? What is it? We're all doomed. We're all doomed. And we roll down the windows and he goes, turn on your lights, will you? We can try it out with the lights.
Like,
so that was really scary, but it was good fun. Yeah.
Everyone's like, thank you, officer, and breathe
out.
We'll go on our way. Nothing to see here.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. I mean, especially for like independent movies or, I mean, I've been part of many a production where the right permits haven't been come through or whatever. So we've all had to sort of just guerrilla shoot, especially around central London. And if anyone questions what we're doing,
just play along with me.
Everyone just runs in different directions.
Exactly. But you see, the problem here is we're all like English and Irish in a, like, not even just in another country, but like in the middle of another country, you know, in the middle of Trump land, basically. And, you know, it was all like, oh, God. Because we'd forgotten in our little town where we were shooting, the locals were brilliant, you know. If we wanted, like, one of the big pickup trucks to have for a camera platform or anything, we'd just go to Flamers, the local bar, and ask, you know, can we have your van? He'd chuck us the keys and off we'd go. You know, they were really helpful. Oh, wow. But if you get in a big city, it's always a bit different.
Yeah, city life versus country life. So the film, because obviously it's got very dark themes, but is it quite darkly funny?
Yes, that's what attracted us to the book. It has a kind of a black humour about it, and, mm-hmm. and you know, especially set in the snow in the Midwest, it just brought the Coen brothers to mind. You know, their yeah. sort of sensibility, and I think both, like Chris, you can say it as well, obviously, but I think we both just, I love the idea of scares and laughter, and you know, something dark but funny, so it's not just grim. You know, yeah. that was the attraction.
Something,
I think.
Yeah. Something super dark and depressing. I like the idea of. I was like, I think everyone has got a morbid curiosity themselves. I think everyone does love a murder mystery and sort of a whodunit or all that kind of thing.
Are you one of those people that when you watch a film with them, you'll tell them who did it at the beginning and it turns out that you're right every time?
I might have been, yeah. I think it's that person there.
Yeah, and it always is, yeah.
I told you.
Yeah, my wife and her late mum were terrible for that. You'd be watching something on TV and they both kind of go, like this, and you'd be like, what are you saying? What's that noise? And you're like, oh, you know who did it. It's that guy there, obviously. Yeah. What are you talking about? You know.
Yeah, I saw him from the start.
And so what's on the cards for you two next? Obviously this has been a success. Have you got anything else up your sleeve or in the pipeline?
Well, for me, it's just writing the next one, hopefully. I'm because that took so long to get made, I'm just writing three different projects at the moment, sort of hedging my bets here a bit, because I've got kids, I can't be like gallivanting off, as my wife calls it, my expensive hobby. So I'm trying to write something and hopefully make a living, you know.
Yeah.
But, Chris? Cool.
And same for me. And we've got the UK release coming up next week, so after that's finished, it is kind of the end of it for the release and everything. So true. Mentally, yeah. I feel like you can move on to new projects and get new things off the ground. Yeah.
I mean, it is kind of, it's filmmaking is such an amazing, exhausting process. And then you do kind of, you make this a dream and then you achieve it and then it does end. And then you're like, and then we start again.
Yeah.
Next one.
Yeah.
Do the sequel. I don't want it to take 7 years for the next
video. Oh my goodness.
Well, maybe you could do it again. If you could do it again in shorter time periods and then you can whip
the way,
out in a year.
Friend of mine used to always put it back in the old like Blockbuster, you know, video shop days, which is you do all this work and make a film and then on a Sunday afternoon somebody with a hangover wanders in, puts their hand up for your film and then goes, no, I'll go for that one, and that's what it all ends up.
That's it.
But no, I'm so excited to see this. I went to see a couple of things at the BFI and I saw the kind of showcase on what was on, and I'm a Serial Killer actually stood out to me, just my personal preference of film. So
oh, thank you.
I'm really excited. So thank you so much for
your
time.
Yeah.
And we're really chuffed because there's 150 posters going up on the Tube. I think they're just up today, and that's the first time in either of our careers that's ever happened. So we've got real actual physical posters up around London, which is brilliant. You know,
posters.
That's so exciting.
I love a good posters and trailers. I get so excited.
Yeah.
I love a good Tube poster because you just see them everywhere and it sticks
in
your mind.
Exactly, yeah. That's what I'm thrilled about. Like, I'm going to get the camera out now and get some photographs. You know,
get some selfies next to the poster.
Amazing. Awesome.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right, thanks so much, guys.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks,
guys. Thanks very much.
That's brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Take
Bye.
Care.
Bye.
Bye.
I hope there's a sequel called Maybe I'm a Serial Killer.
And then
an afterwards.
All right, I am
all right,
a killer.
I definitely am a serial killer.
I was a serial killer.
You could go on forever.
You could have like ultimate, there's a series and series and series. That's brilliant.
I'd watch them all.
Thank you. I believe in miracles. Since you came along, you sex a thing. Give my heart gladly yesterday. also blame you. I believe in miracles. Since I came along, you said something. Kiss me. You said something. Touch me, baby. You said something. I love the way you touch me, darling. You said something.
Much. We've got Maud Hurst in the studio. Thank Hello. You for joining Hello. Us. Oh, I've got to put your mic up. There we go.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
I'm here. How are you doing? Are we
I'm
good?
Really good. How are you guys?
Very good. I'm good. Yeah.
It's marvellous. I love doing a show on a Friday afternoon because you're just pumped.
Yeah. You weekend, actually are.
The weekend is about to begin.
And it's nearly Christmas.
Oh, it's nearly God. Christmas.
December Fridays are the best Fridays.
Yeah, they are.
Out of all my Fridays.
Advent Fridays. Right, so Maud, for all our listeners, just to explain who you are and what you do, you're an actress and you are on The Vikings.
I am.
The TV show, which is quite exciting. Mm-hmm. I love that time period in history, so that's my favourite.
I should have listened more in history, but I do actually like the Viking era. And my brain was all over the place in school.
What we read in the history books is really quite different from the show. So even if you had read up on it, you can still learn something else by watching it.
Thank you very much.
And how did you get involved with the Vikings? How did you get...
So it's been like 4.5 years, I think, since I auditioned. And I'd just been travelling around Thailand and I came back to London terrified that I wasn't working. And I was like, And my agent was like, got this really cool... show, do you want to audition? I was like, sure, great. So went in, met the director, and it was a really last minute casting, and I think within like 3 or 4 weeks I was told, and then flew to Ireland and started filming.
That is scary, the actor's fear, I call it, you know, and you don't know what, like after university for me, I just want to go and act, and you get this fear where you just don't know audition wise or work wise.
I hate it. The first time you get to set, normally the first thing people say, hi, so what are you doing next? And you're like, I'm just really excited about this job.
You don't
actually
you focus your mind on the day.
Day to day.
That's so
cool.
True.
And well, okay, I've got something to admit. I've never been on a Viking themed TV show. But when I was a teenager, I used to do something really, really, really geeky, and I used to do medieval reenactment.
Did you now?
It's like, oh, you're weird. Don't laugh at me, Joe.
I was laughing at a joke I've written down for later.
Okay, it's like...
How about you being medieval?
No, honestly, I used to be such a geek. I used to spend majority of my weekends going all over the country, and we'd put on this show. You know, you go to castles or historical fairs or whatever.
I didn't know this existed.
And you do for example, in Nottingham every year, they've got the Robin Hood Festival, and then hundreds and hundreds of medieval reenactors go.
I have heard of these.
And I played Maid Marian in the.
Oh, well done. You? Congratulations. Well done.
It was the role of my career. But we did. But my medieval reenactors, they specialised in Viking up to Robin Hood. So I spent most of my teenage years running around being a fair maiden.
So you're a fellow Viking?
Fellow Viking.
Hey. Yay. Were you a fighter?
I was. Yeah. I learned to use a broadsword.
I wish I was. Helga was not. She's a lover, not a fighter.
Oh, they don't let you fight.
I don't fight. I don't ride horseback. No. But, missed all the fun things, but I didn't get muddy.
But
that's all right.
Viking women were actually quite independent. If you look at women in history, as opposed to, so in the last sort of 1,000 years or whatever, they had this, like, they could, you could divorce the men. which was like a power to a Viking woman. She could go, like, if your Viking man got home and drunk and was like, whatever, you could be like, that's it, I divorce you, fuck it.
My Viking man is home.
Yeah, they were really progressive, weren't they? Right. It was, yeah, it was crazy. And I think it regressed a lot in different other parts of history. But Vikings, yeah, the women were fierce. And some of them were actual, like, warriors.
The pagan women were like, whoosh. And they had these huge ladles. It was, like, completely legal to beat your husband up with a ladle.
Yeah,
with
a ladle? Yeah, with a
big iron ladle. Yeah, you could. So you didn't want to be late. You would not want to piss off your
woman.
Didn't
want to be late in the ladled.
We should have reacted that today. We should have done a reenactment.
We should have done that.
We should have.
So what was your favourite part about playing your character in the Vikings?
I think working with Gustav, who plays Floki, my husband, in the show. He's amazing. And so it was kind of like a masterclass every day being on set. He's acted since he was about 5. Mm. So his whole life has been immersed. And he, so that was brilliant. But also just being on the sets is so epic in the middle of Wicklow Mountains in Ireland.
That must be so cool.
It was amazing. And like on my wedding day, I think probably my favourite scene that I filmed, but they hadn't told us how we were going to get married. And we turned up in this lake and they'd built a boat of flowers, and they were like, so you're just going to enter in on this. I was like, what?
Oh my Lord,
that's beautiful.
It's great, but it kind of stuffs up your real life wedding because you're like, yeah. I never got the boat and the flowers.
Never going to beat that.
It looked really pretty on TV.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's super cool. And so do you get, because obviously your face has been out and about, because you were in the Tudors as well, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
I loved that TV show. Anything historical with a corset and a bit of sex, I'm like, I'm in there.
You've got your sword and you're ready to watch.
I'm ready at home, just ready. And then, so your face has been out and about quite a lot. Do you get recognised around or...?
I look really different to Helga. They completely got rid of my eyebrows, and so it changes your face a lot.
Why did they take your eyebrows off? That was
weird. I think they were kind of going Scandinavian.
It's a Viking
everyone
thing.
Really blonde. Yeah, they wanted to give it a look, the show, to kind of have a different feel and to kind of make it. Dark eyebrows are in right now, so they wanted to make it completely different, I guess. But it's not a good look, and I really would never try it.
Eyebrowless.
It's not good.
You know, you'd look like a weird, like an egg, wouldn't you?
Literally like an egg, yeah. One of my friends was like, you look like an alien. I can't see if you're angry, like happy, heads. Sad, yeah.
But a sexy alien. You're a sexy alien.
Thanks, thank you. But so, yeah, in the group, when all the Vikings are together, we do get recognised, but very rarely in London do I get it, which is a nice thing, actually.
Yeah, you can go incognito to wherever you want to go.
I know, drunken nights out, a good. Nobody knows.
Until someone covers your eyebrows up. It's you!
There you are! And what was your favourite... Did you have like a favourite kind of... Because I love hearing about behind the scenes and background to access all areas and stuff. So what was your sort of favourite thing that happened behind the scenes?
Travis, who plays the lead guy, Ragnar, he is like a complete joker all the time. He's always misbehaving. And one day one of the other actors used to drive himself to set every day, and he parked his car, and Travis just went missing for ages. No one knew where he was, and eventually at the end of the day we realised what he'd done. We opened Bob's car, and about 50 chickens just jumped out, and he filled his whole car was just covered in chicken poo, and he just filled this whole car. Yeah, that was Travis.
That's a different level.
You know, just sometimes he reads someone else's lines. I'm a bit of a laugh. No, he fills a car with chicken and chicken poo.
Yeah.
That's like a pretty medieval joke, isn't it? It's like, I'm getting ye chickens, put ye chickens in ye cart.
And it's also educational.
There you go.
Like, oh, lovely, prank me again. Thanks, yeah.
Wow. Does anything ever go wrong? Like, I love it as well with like bloopers and...
Yeah, for me, the thing that always goes wrong is I get the giggles. I can't, and once you go and you really can't go.
That's the worst thing on set, giggles on set.
In a death scene.
Well, that's the other thing. One of the other actors that died, everyone was really emotional on the day that they died. And he was supposed to be dead and he couldn't stop crying. He was like actually weeping while he was dead. I was like, you can't cry while you're a corpse. It's not desirable, that. But yeah, lots of things go wrong because it's so huge. In the battle sequences, there's normally like 300 or 400 extras. So things are definitely going to go wrong when people are like flying around with weapons and stuff. Yeah. There was lots of injuries and people falling off horses. Yeah.
Medic!
Cool. Yeah.
Some of the extras are probably medics, just ready, close, ready to go.
Medic / extra. Mm. They're just like multifunctional on
with
set
no
now.
Eyebrows. It's a Viking thing.
I have been tempted to bleach my... You remember that...
Don't.
What were you just about to say?
I've been tempted to bleach my eyebrows, I have, because I saw that Dragon Tattoo film. the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
And Rooney Mara had no eyebrows, and I was like, she's the sexiest thing ever. But then I realised that I would not look like Rooney Mara.
I just eyebrows. No. I just don't recommend doing it. It's just not good. It's not good for the ego.
So did you have to dye them back again?
Yes, straight away. In fact, even sometimes after the end of the day, I just say to my makeup artist, like, please just draw them on for tonight. Can't go home to the mirror. Can't do it.
I just want to sleep in my own eyebrows.
I don't understand when girls dye their hair, but dyeing your eyebrows, is that the same?
Some people dye their pubes.
Okie dokie. Anyway, back to the eyebrows.
They do.
Do they fall off?
They dye everything. No.
No, and they grow really quickly. Who knew?
Really?
Yeah, eyebrows grow like my...
I was talking about pubes.
Why are we not talking about pubes anymore?
I was like, my pubes do grow really quickly. Yeah.
Oh, this
TMI. TMI.
to the best of Johanna James and Noel Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome back.
Clarky and James.
Yeah, dude.
Right, we sound like we could rob a bank. Come on, Clarky and James.
No, we sound like Sharky and George. Do you remember that cartoon, Sharky and George?
No.
Was it before your time, was it?
Before I was born. Well, we've got our first guest in the studio. Welcome to Camille Gatin, who is who is the producer on the movie The Girl with All the Gifts.
Fantastic.
Which we did review a couple months back. Because I went to see the screening that was in Leicester Square. I had a shock of my life, because normally you go to like sort of press screenings or whatnot, and I was sitting on the front row, and then suddenly, like, Gemma Arterton came out, and then Glenn Close, and I was just like, my mouth just dropped, like, oh my god.
They're only people, you know.
I know, but you know, when I really look up to like Glenn Close and people, but I'm looking at them.
Yeah, Glenn Close is wonderful.
Yeah, and so I was just like, I wasn't prepared. That's all right. That's, I don't fangirl over many people, but I was just like, I had a shock.
Yeah, she's Devil Wears Prada me. Fucking quality.
Yeah.
Oh no, that's Meryl Streep. I'm all confused now.
I wasn't going to correct you, but
Glenn Close is
Cruella de Vil.
Yeah, she's also the man pirate that goes in the boo boo box in Hook with the beard.
Right. Okay. You're getting a bit obscure. Let's get to
The Girl with All the Gifts. So for anyone who doesn't know what that film is or hasn't yet had the chance to see it, do you want to give us a brief?
Yeah, I'm not going to say too much, because I think if you've not seen it, it's better to go in cold and not have any expectations. It's just a messed up school with little kids who live in prison cells, and every morning soldiers come and at gunpoint make them sit in wheelchairs, and they're strapped really securely and rolled into class. They're in a bunker, and the kids don't seem to have a problem with that. Gemma Arterton is their teacher, and they love her, and they love going to class, but they're just treated like little monsters.
And it's set in a dystopian future, which is my favourite genre of film. I love it. So messed up.
Or as we know it, the West Midlands.
Yeah, in 2 years' time. So I have a question for you. Because I recently sat with some amazing publishers and they gave me the book of the film. I said, we should read this, it's wonderful, and the film's out. And I was like, oh, yeah. So tell me how that all happened. Was that, I'm understanding that actually there was a film before there was a book.
There was. So Mike Carey's been writing Sandman, Lucifer, X-Men, like for 30 years. Mm-hmm. He's an amazing comic book writer. I met with him for a general meeting. And at the end of the meeting, it was like, oh, look, I've just written this short story. Do you mind taking a look? And it's the first 5 minutes of our film.
Amazing.
And I knew Colin McCarthy, the director, really wanted to do a whole film in derelict location. He's got this obsession with dereliction porn, as we like to call it.
Right.
So have I.
So I sent him the short story. I was like, look, I think we can do something with this. So the three of us storylined the film together, and Mike wrote the script, and we had a bit of a break at some point, and Mike was like, oh, I've just written the novel based on the script. So Colm and I have never read the book.
Do you guys own the book, then?
Well, I had to have the rights for the film, but I was like, I've never signed an option for a book before that I've never read.
Right.
And obviously the book came out early, before the film, but we got really lucky. Joss Whedon was in the UK doing Age of Ultron, and he's a massive Mike Carey comic book fan. So he actually bought the book, because as you know, Joss Whedon would have nothing better to do than go to Waterstones on Age of Ultron
and read a whole book
and then tweet about it, and he tweeted about it with the cover of the book going, this is the best thing I've read in ages, and that helped with financing.
I'm sure it did.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
So it's great.
So tell me about the process of working with children. They always say, don't worry. You have to pretend right now that I'm not the movie director and actor and blah, 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 and I'm just a radio host.
So avoid animals. Yes. We had that. Avoid children.
You had that.
We had that. Avoid asbestos. We had that.
Yeah, I think you should actually avoid asbestos, though.
Definitely.
That's one that can seriously damage your health, whereas the other two just can be annoyances.
Look, our main character's a 10-year-old girl, and she's in every scene.
She is in every scene. You follow everything through her.
What was the casting process?
We saw 3,000 tapes. We met 500 girls, and it sounds nuts, but she's the very last girl we met. Very last one. And I wasn't with Colm. She's from Nottingham, from the TV workshop.
Mm.
And I was down in London closing financing. We were doing chemistry reads with Gemma and five other girls on the Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Friday afternoon at 5, and Colm's going via Nottingham because he just want to make sure we don't leave any stone unturned.
Yeah.
And I remember him calling me and going, there's one more. And she came in on the Monday to read with Gemma, and he was like, yeah, it's her.
Wow. That's amazing. Sometimes the way, isn't it, that it's the last one that you meet. Or sometimes the very first one.
Well, interestingly, the very first one we met was the other amazing one.
Yeah, wow.
Like a bookend.
A bookend of girls.
And was there any... was it quite an open casting? Like, did you see... Or was she always going to be...
It was a bit unusual in that, basically, and Noel will understand that, is when you put a casting call out, especially for kids, you get... the upper middle class girls first from the really motivated, momager driven schools.
Yes.
And that's fine, but that's not at all the vibe we were going for. So we actually had a scout that went around the UK and met a lot of normal girls from normal schools. Mm-hmm. And that was really important to us because obviously this is a dystopian world where there is no class. You know, there's just a few human beings left around. And so there isn't like... posh or not posh. These kids, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but these kids have not been raised by normal grown-ups in a normal society.
Yeah.
So they had to be sort of blank canvases and they just had to be emotionally really raw.
So what you're saying, which is a good thing as well, is that actually it was a non-specific in terms of race or class or anything like that, which is great to know, you know, and hopefully, like you listeners out there that kind of are wanting to be actors, you know, it does happen a lot more now that roles are non-specific. Mm-hmm. It's really important.
And we made an effort with that. We asked Mike Carey to remove any description of age or colour for all of the characters.
Yeah.
So that for our casting director, it was completely open. So there's only 8 characters, but half my cast is female and half my cast is black.
Yeah.
And that was a conscious, you know, decision by Colm and myself when we started the process.
Yeah. Awesome.
The cast as a whole were really, really good. But the little girl absolutely kind of totally carried the film.
She's amazing.
She's really good. I don't want to give too much away because the twist comes quite quickly in the movie. I can see why the opening would have been a short in itself and how it's like extended to, you know, So you're not waiting until the very, very end to get any kind of huge, huge, huge twists.
And when are you released on Home Entertainment?
18th of January.
Boom.
Oh, just after Crimbo.
Just after Christmas. So when you're out in your sales, guys, The Girl With All The Gifts will be out. Make sure you all grab it.
And one thing that I really love, because dystopian future, sometimes they can go really CGI, and CGI just doesn't really cut the mustard for me. I find that it, like... When whole things are CGI'd, it just ruins it. And I remember I was doing some like research on this film when I was going to talk about it. And like you said about the real locations that were abandoned, so all of it was, it felt so real. So it was in the future, but it was like real hospitals that were abandoned, real shops, real locations. So
Dudley, Stoke-on-Trent.
Oh man, glamorous.
Cannock Chase and Chernobyl. We went to Chernobyl.
Did you actually go?
Yeah.
To a, I guess, near area.
No, in Pripyat. So the actual city next to the, which was completely abandoned. We needed it to look completely overgrown and derelict.
Yeah.
And so we went there with a drone. And so all the big London cityscapes, obviously we added all the St. Paul's and, you know, London skyline. But actually everything is totally real and it's all Chernobyl.
And were you, I guess you were, I guess, near the radiation then.
So you get a little... Geiger thing around your neck, and then when it goes,
you know, you're
you
too
walk
near.
Away.
Yeah. And let me understand. So you were nominated and won, a British Independent Film Award.
The first of its kind. They recognise that being a first-time film producer is hard.
Yes.
So it was a new category this year. It's called Breakthrough Producer.
Well done.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. That's great stuff. And was that an exciting night for you, or?
Well, you get free champagne if you win. So I got pissed with Jennifer Saunders, which was sort of really fun.
Were you tapping her up for the next movie, potentially?
I was just getting drunk with
her. You were
just having fun.
And where have you put your little statue? Where have you put your little award?
Up on the
shelf. Yeah, that's what I do. It's just on the shelf.
And how did you get Glenn Close involved? Because...
I get asked that a lot.
Yeah.
How did we get Glenn Close?
How did you get the cast?
We asked. Yeah. We just sent it to her, and it's just... serendipity always, and she'd literally had a chat with her agent 2 days before that going, I really want to do something different. I always get offered like the angry ex-wife or the cruel grandmother. I just want to do something different. And he called her and he was like, look, I just got this British indie zombie film.
Yeah.
And she read it and she loved it.
Great.
And she just got on Skype with our director within 48 hours and she just said yes on the spot.
Fantastic.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
Sometimes it happens, man. I think that, and that's the key, you know, people don't always ask because they think like the Americans are unobtainable. Mm. And actually, they're not, you know, and a lot of them are wanting to do different things. So,
good. Glenn wanted good to come you. To Stoke-on-Trent badly.
Who doesn't want to go to Stoke-on-Trent now? I want to go now. Should we just go now? Let's all right, just go now.
All right, off air.
Okay.
So, what's next for you? You got anything you can speak about?
Yeah, Mike Carey, the writer. This time we've read the book. His next book, Foul Side, which came out in April, I think, where it's a ghost story set in a women's prison.
Fantastic.
So, we're doing that as a trio again, Colin, Mike, and myself.
Fantastic. So, I'm expecting a role in that one. I know it's a ghost story in a women's prison, but I'm pretty diverse.
I can
play a woman.
You wear a corset, it's fine.
The ghost is a 10-year-old boy. I'm sure we can CGI you somehow.
I can do that too. Don't worry about that. And is that a period piece or is that a modern piece?
No, it's a modern piece.
Fantastic.
I'm assuming the ghost might be a bit periody.
If he's young, if he's 10, he might have died 100 years ago. Let's not give it
back
away
in
regardless.
The day.
Oh, well, that sounds brilliant. That sounds brilliant.
Nice and jumpy.
Great. Thank you.
the best of Johanna James and Noel Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Right, we've got our next guest on the line, so thank you so much, Hayden.
Thanks, Hayden. Take care.
So, our next guest who's waiting on the line, we'll hope that it will pick
up. All the way from America.
From America, it's Brian Tyree Henry, who plays Paperboy on the new
show,
FX show Atlanta. So, let's see if this works.
I'm loving it.
Brian, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can. Perfectly. Thank
you. How are you doing, sir?
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much.
I'm doing all right. Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. Thank you.
No problem at all.
So, yeah, we were just telling all the listeners that you play Paperboy on the new show Atlanta. And because we're on episode 3 over here in England.
Oh, good, man. You guys got a lot to catch up on.
Yeah. We can't wait. We can't wait.
That's good. That's great. How are you liking it so far?
Yeah, loving it. I'm loving it. Like, for me, sitting down watching a show, you know, you didn't really know what to expect, because obviously, I don't know if you know, I create as well, and I write and I direct and make movies and stuff like that. And you know, it's always when someone's doing it abroad that you admire, you kind of want, you know, I hope this is going to be good. And it's so good. And you guys are doing such a great job. How is it being received over in America?
It's received unlike anything I've ever seen before, honestly. I mean, the fans and the people, they want this, you know, they really crave it, and we're happy that everyone is receiving it.
Yeah.
And for anyone who hasn't picked up on the show yet over here, just explain, if you could explain a little bit about your character, Paperboy, who's one of the rappers.
Yeah, well, Paperboy is really known as Alfred, and I play the cousin to Ernst, who is played by Donald Glover.
Mm-hmm.
And my cousin is a little down and out. He drops out of college and moves back to Atlanta, where we're from, and he hears that I'm an underground rap sensation and decides that he wants to become my manager, and hilarity and all kinds of craziness ensue with us trying to get fame and notoriety and paper, you know?
Yeah.
It's just about us trying to make it. You know?
So the track, the main track, is that one of, because obviously Donald is also the rapper himself, Childish Gambino. Was that track one of his tracks, or was that specifically made for the show by you and Donald?
That track was specifically made for the show, and actually that's not me rapping in the song. That's his brother, Stephen Glover, who's rapping.
Okay.
I'm trying to be as cool as them, you know. I fake it till I make it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, but they produced it and arranged it and everything.
Yeah.
And, so came out kind of fire, I think.
You know, it's great. So listen, speaking of trying to be as cool as Mr. Glover, so I have a love-hate relationship with Donald Glover. I have a love-hate relationship.
Oh, no.
I've never met Donald, and I consider him a genius. So my love-hate relationship is this. You know, I act and I write and I direct and I make movies and stuff like that. So my love with Donald is, when I see him doing this stuff as well, I go, this guy is brilliant, and I love Donald Glover and everything. And then I go in for auditions and stuff like that, and then 2 months later I see the job's gone to Donald Glover, and I'm like, this motherfucker. If I ever see this guy, I'm gonna wring his neck. And then I come home and Atlanta's on. I'm like, this show's so great. And then I go for another audition. What is it like working with the genius that is Donald Glover? Essentially, is the question.
Okay, I can go into that. He's great, man. Like, he's like, instantly when I auditioned for it, he was in the room, and it was like sitting next to a buddy that I've known for years. You know what I mean? We played and we ad-libbed and we joked around, and it was just instant, man. And he is a genius. I think that's the best word to describe him. You know, he's really, really aware of what's going on in the world and how to relate to people in the world. And he's done really well assembling this team of just coming together and telling the story of these people in this town. He's just great, man. Like, he's really like a brother to me.
Great.
Really love him. So
great. Well,
I hope that changes your bipolar love affair.
No, man, it's all love, man. I genuinely think he's amazing, because you know, over here, like I said, I do the same sort of thing, so I get it, and I see how hard he's working and stuff. It's just, I want to get some of them damn roles too. That's all I'm saying, you know.
Hey, man, we got a second season, man. That's room for everybody. We got a second season. You know?
Yeah, great.
And Brian, how did you get involved with the show initially? Was it like full audition process, or?
Well, it started because I bribed everyone in the city. You know, my manager saw the project, called Atlanta. I went to college in Atlanta at Morehouse College, and she was like, you know, I really feel like this show is something that'll really stick to you. And I opened it, and I read the first five pages, and I saw Alfred, and I was like, done. This is it.
Yeah,
gotta be it. Like, I gotta do this. So, you know, it kind of just came to me, and I went for it, man. I was like, if I'm going to be in a show called Atlanta with Donald Glover, I got to kick his ass.
Yeah. Great.
And I'm glad it worked out that way.
No, it was awesome. And you originated also, you were the general, right, in the Book of Mormon, like when it first started, right?
General butt fucking naked.
Oh,
man,
my God, I've seen that show four times.
This is the original guy.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I did it on Broadway.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing.
I love that role. It's a bit of that's a scene stealing role to have.
I don't think I never saw you in it, but I'm sure nobody does it as good as you, bro. I'm sure.
Oh, come on, you guys. Man, I'm saying, who's on the payroll, man? I love it. Thank you. That means a lot. Thanks a lot. That was a great time for me to work with Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Was like destiny fulfilled. I watched South Park since I was like in the ninth grade.
Yeah.
And to be in a room with these two guys who were so smart and so funny and so political and so they're geniuses.
They're geniuses as well. I think you are. But maybe genius inspires genius, you know. So you must be kind of genius as well for these guys to be gravitating towards you and vice versa, because that's kind of how the world works, energies and stuff, you know. So, you know, you're obviously doing the right thing.
I'm in love with you guys. I'm in love with you guys right now. Like, this love affair is amazing.
Yeah, man. I'm gonna give you a little tweet later. Yeah. I'm gonna tweet you later on and say what's up.
Okay.
And
do it, man.
I will.
Just to close, Brian, what have you got in the future? Obviously, a second series coming up. Are there any other projects, anything that you want to shout out or excited about?
Yeah, changing the world. That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, I really want to focus on changing the world, man. Yeah. We've got a lot going on and a lot to think about and a lot of things that we have to do to bring each other together. So I'm going to go out there and I'm going to change this damn world.
Yeah.
One person at a time.
Yeah, just quickly. I think shows, how relevant do you think shows like Atlanta are, you know, in the current state that the Americas are in with your new president and stuff like that?
It's so necessary. It's so necessary. You know, when we started the show, we didn't want to feel like the show was important. We didn't want to make the show on this pedestal and hold it up to this thing, to say that we're speaking this, we're trying to say this thing, we're trying to preach this thing. We just wanted to tell the stories of these people.
Yeah.
But then, and in itself, itself became... a thing, it became important.
Yeah.
We all needed to hear these stories and we all needed to see different sides of life. And I think that Atlanta does that. And we're not going to stop, man.
Because we're loving it. We're loving it. We're loving it in the UK,
good,
brother.
Good. We got you.
Thank you so much. And we might be shooting a movie in Atlanta. We might be shooting a movie in Atlanta in February. So I'm going to come check you.
Well, you better call me, dude.
No, I will, bro. I'm going to Insta you or tweet you later on, and then I'm going to hit you up if we're coming. But I think we are.
I think a bromance has started over the phone. This is beautiful to watch.
In fact, we might be doing a recce in a few weeks. I might holler you then.
Hey, man, I may get your name tattooed on my neck. No, man, I'm that in love with you.
Oh, thanks, brother.
Get on Twitter.
All right.
Well, I'm going to try.
All right, I'll Insta you or something. All right, brother.
Well, thank you so much,
thanks
Brian.
So much.
Thank you. And make sure everyone...
All right, you guys.
Atlanta continues on Saturday nights from 10 p.m. on Boom. Fox UK. Thank you very much, Brian.
Boom.
Over
we
and
love
out.
Brian. Thanks, man. Right. Page boy.
All right.
Paper boy.
Yeah. What I want. Scatter, and you pull them all together, and I.
listening to the best of Johanna James and Noel Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Hi guys, Johanna James, FUBAR Radio. I'm here with Justin Kelly.
Hello, how are you?
And we're here to talk about mainly your brand new film, King Cobra.
Yes, it premiered last night and we have one more screening today.
Amazing.
And I think it's the last one, so if people missed it, then they'll have to wait till it comes out.
Yeah, and it comes out end of October?
Yeah, October 21st in, you know, in theater, in select theaters, in VOD, et cetera, in the States. Mm-hmm. And I don't know our exact release date for Europe yet.
Oh, okay.
It'll be soon, so I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
And so people don't know what King Cobra is about, it's based on a true story. I'll let you...
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's based on a very wild true story about a young aspiring gay porn star who becomes so popular and in demand that a producer of his is murdered over his contract.
And that was totally true. Yes,
totally
and
true.
Did you just hear about that story and think, oh my God, I need to make a movie? Or was it, what was the process in?
I read about it and I just, it's such a... Such a crazy story that, of course, you know, your first thought is, how did this happen and why? Mm. And the more I read about it and learned about the characters, the more fascinating the entire story became. And I just felt like it would make a really interesting, unique, cool movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, there aren't a lot of movies out there about gay porn, so I figured...
No, there isn't. Not like mainstream.
Why not give it a go?
Yeah. And I think maybe, even though it wasn't porn, but I think like Magic Mike and films like that have kind of opened up maybe more of that sex industry into mm-hmm. being in mainstream film, which is good. Well, it's great for everybody.
Yeah. Sex sells, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you've got some fabulous people who are cast in the movie. Like Molly Ringwald has come out of... Come back. She's coming back, which is... It was an odd choice for her, I think, like considering her like bubblegum history. Mm-hmm. For her role, so I was really excited to see Molly.
She's
and
awesome.
James Franco, you've got Garrett Clayton who plays your lead.
He's a lead. He comes from a Disney Channel past, and so you know it's his wild crossover grown-up role.
Yeah. And he's absolutely gorgeous as well. Yeah. And is he gay straight, or was he playing, or
I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
He's playing gay.
Okay.
And he kind of just I was like trying to find someone who had that sort of split appeal of being able to have the kind of young boyish
yeah.
sort of look,
mm-hmm.
But at the same time be able to pull off that kind of confident porn star vibe.
Yeah, because I saw if you want to check out the trailers, guys, I went onto Google and you can find the trailer for King Cobra, and the little snippets that I got to see was super realistic. I really felt like it was this boy, young guy, you know, being asked to take off his clothes for his first ever porn. And
oh yeah,
very yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He you know plays a super seemingly kind of naive kid from San Diego who's trying to make something of his life and get out of his mother's apartment and make some money, and does it by going to some guy's basement in Pennsylvania and making porn.
And is it set modern day, or is it, because it was a true story, is it set back in the time of...
Yeah, it's period, but you know, pretty recent period. It was early to mid 2000s.
Okay.
You know, so not that long ago, but it was long enough ago to where we still had to be particular with costumes and set dressing,
yeah.
and you know, old websites and computers and cameras. And it was really fun for me because, you know, yeah. early 2000s are fun.
You get to go back.
And,
yeah, yeah, it's like retro.
Because baggy jeans and...
Oh yeah, all of the... What was the name?
Early digital camcorders.
Yeah, like flip phones and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
Garrett's character has a flip phone for sure.
Amazing.
Yeah, so like long enough to where, you know, we'd pay attention to that, but it made it really fun actually to make.
And there's a... Because even the porn industry has changed in the last 10 years then, because so much is just all about like internet. But back in the day, there was a lot of money in porn movies. So I can understand maybe the murder, like the reason for murder, and it's a big business.
Yeah, I mean, a big part of the story, you know, it's to the Joe and Harlow, played by... Joe is James Franco, Harlow is Keegan Allen, mm-hmm. and they are these two wild, you know, they start off as kind of gay escorts, so that's the company they run, and
right.
then they move into porn to make more money and become obsessed with Brent Corrigan, Garrett Clayton's character. And it was all true. They really thought they made a lot of money, but then they fell into really heavy debt, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
So American.
Yeah.
and they've really believed that making a video with this star Brent Corrigan would make them millions.
Yeah.
They became obsessed with it to the point to where it led to a murder, because the only way to kind of get Brent free from this contract was to off the producer who sort of like held the contract, which is crazy to even think that you would do that in the first place, let alone get away with it. You know, I mean, they
unhinged.
Yeah, a bit unhinged. Though.
And casting wise, did you approach people for roles, or did you have lots of auditions? How was like the pretend porn audition process?
Well, James Franco was attached before I wrote the script because he's a producer on it, and
okay.
he really, you know, without him, the film never would have happened. It's the same with my first film, I Am Michael. Mm-hmm. He was very like instrumental in getting it off the ground and helping, you know, get it made and financed and everything. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so he was attached from day one, and of course that helped get other people involved. And the next was the Steven character, and I knew that James worked with Christian Slater on this film called Adderall Diaries.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I just I'm such a Slater fan. I grew up with Heathers and True Romance, and
yeah.
he's just so fucking cool. Oh wait, I can't cuss.
Yeah, you can swear. It's FUBAR. It's fine.
He's so cool. But you know, he's never played gay, and it's a pretty wild role for first time gay character.
Yeah,
you know, he's a gay pornographer into very young boys. So I didn't know if he'd be interested at all. But he read the script, and we had dinner and talked about it, and he signed on really quickly. Yeah.
But
I think just sort of, you know, not that he was so excited in that sense. I think just thought, you know, I can only imagine the scripts that these actors get. Plenty of great scripts, but this one, it did stand out because it's a really wild story, and I think he just got excited at the idea of doing something different.
And so this is this your second sort of major feature? And how did you go, right, I want to direct. This is what I want. Did you want
to
act
before? My whole life, I've always wanted to be a filmmaker.
Okay.
Yeah, always wanted to direct. Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know, went to movies with my dad all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just been my obsession. And so I wanted to fight to the death to become a director.
And it's, you're doing it. You're in.
Long road to get here, but it paid off and it was worth it.
And so what's next? What would be your, now that you've done sort of two substantial films, what would be the next project?
It's kind of crazy. I actually already shot my third film.
Okay,
which
done,
is
boom.
Nuts.
Okay.
Yeah, it was really cool. We shot Cobra. We shot Cobra exactly a year ago.
Wow. It's a quick turnaround.
It was a very quick turnaround. Yeah. From script to the entire process was so fast, it almost feels I'm very lucky.
Yeah.
And then this past summer, so you know, like Cobra was completely done post wise. We premiered at Tribeca in April.
Uh-huh.
And then because of the response from the festival, I was able to get a third film off the ground that we shot that summer. So just a couple months ago.
Rolling.
And it's a complete departure. It's kind of a family drama. It's not gay. It's not a true story.
Okay.
So, I wanted to, you know, mix it up.
Yeah, because people might be a little bit like, oh, okay, so you do the gay true stories and be like, no, yeah. no, boom.
I don't want to be put in a corner.
Try this.
No.
Yeah.
Try a family drama with a weird supernatural kind of backstory. It's great.
Amazing. And what would be the future goals then? Where would you like to sort of, what would be the real I've made it moment?
Good question. I mean, I'm always kind of drawn towards sort of scandalous or controversial or, mm-hmm. you know, weird stories, but I definitely want to, you know, to make one that would be a bit more accessible, like a bit more mainstream, which, you know, I feel like is on the horizon. So yeah, there's not a particular story or genre or anything, just, you know, if I can continue to make cool stories that are unique and different, but that are also, you know, accessible, which oddly enough, this one I think will be, even though it's about gay porn. But just it's a bit, you know, it's a really entertaining movie and funny at times in
it's
a way you
story,
wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know, just keep making
cool. Well, thank you. All the best of luck. Yes, well, you're absolutely killing it right now. So just keep running.
I'm going to keep running. Great.
Keep
thank
running.
You so much for having me. Yeah.
Thank you. On FUBAR Radio. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see, no, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Stand by me. If the sky that we look upon should tumble and fall, or the mountain should crumble, see, Just as long as you stand by me. And darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand now. Stand by me. Stand by me.
The best of Johanna James and Noel Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Hey guys, I'm here today with a very special guest. It's Michael Landers in the building, everybody. I actually don't have an applause thing, so I'll just do it myself.
That's good. Thank you very much.
That was a bit
much.
Lame, actually.
It's Johanna.
Johanna. So, busy time for you. You are American, but you're currently in London, England.
I am.
How are you finding?
I was going to do a bad English accent. No, I'm not.
Oh, can you do an English accent?
I can do the woman at the airport at the magazine that goes, cashier number 5, please. But that's like, that's Johanna.
That was very good. I was going to... So, are you acquainted with England? Like, do you know...
Yeah, I've come here quite a bit.
Yeah.
My wife's dad is Scottish. I did a couple of series here. I did a series here. I did a play. Yeah. Occasionally, you guys invite me over.
So you
and
get
I
to-
love it.
Yeah,
but this show was made for Sky, but we literally filmed Hooten and the Lady all over the world.
Yeah, I was going to ask that because awesome. That is the thing that you're promoting at the moment, which is your brand new Sky series, which starts today.
Tonight at 9.
On Sky One.
Sky One.
The main channel.
The main Sky.
And so, yeah, I've just been checking out the trailers and stuff. It looks, for me, it reminded me a little bit of like the sort of Indiana little homage to the sort of 80s.
It is a throwback. It's just a big... fun escape.
Action adventure.
It's got humor. And we literally did film all over the world. We were in Russia. We were in Cambodia. We went to Rome, Africa, Namibia.
So did you collect little trinkets?
Air miles? I collected
air miles.
Snow globes? Did I collect little snow globes? I collected a lot of air miles.
Which is your favorite country to visit?
We ended in Cambodia, which I didn't anticipate myself going there. So to watch the sunrise at Angkor Wat is kind of awesome. But I'm half Italian, or my grandfather was, so I loved Italy. We started in Rome.
Getting back to your European roots.
It was fun. I mean, like, we were in Russia in the dead of winter, and I got to bring my kids on there to Moscow. We're one of the only shows that's ever filmed in the metro system in Moscow, which is cool. And we shot in Red Square. It's awesome.
Special times. So you are, it's called Hooten and the Lady, and you play...
I play Hooten.
Hooten. And the lady is played by Ophelia Lovibond.
Ophelia Lovibond.
Don't you just love saying that name? Ophelia Lovibond.
Ophelia Love... Yes.
You have to roll your tongue at least 3 times. It's a very sexual name. I love
it. Is it?
And also...
It's not like Johanna. No, I like Johanna. Fuck, I like Johanna.
Yay! Thanks.
That's a role. I play Hooten. He's an American kind of adventurer guy that is very good at tracking down... artifacts or treasures or anything for private investors. He does it his own way. He doesn't follow any rules, which also leads him into a bunch of sticky situations.
And is it like comedy?
There is fun. It's tongue-in-cheek.
Tongue-in-cheek.
Banter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Intellectual foreplay.
Bit of bants.
Little bants back and forth. But it's fun. I mean, they're kind of opposites. She's very straight, but they both want the same thing.
Yeah.
They just go about it differently and so that creates a friction.
And did you audition with Ophelia, or was it?
I came to London and met five. They had me read with 5 young actresses, and Ophelia came in last.
Yeah.
And I was making a movie in Thailand, and I flew from Thailand, and she came in she had just got off a plane from New York, and she was playing like, "Oh, I'm just flustered, and
yeah.
I just flew from New York," and I was like, "Bangkok,
immediately.
I got you beat." So we instantly kind of hit it off and had like a little bit of a rat-tat-tat.
A little rat-tat-tat. The chemistry was there. Apparently, she absolutely nails auditions because there's a weird little link I just realised today. Because Noel Clark, who is my co-host here, he is a producer and film director and an actor himself.
Okay.
He's currently promoting his film. It got into the Toronto Film Festival.
Great.
Ophelia was one of her first ever films, was one of his. He auditioned her and he told me about her ages ago. He was like, "Oh, I met this actress. She walked into the room. I had a role in mind for someone else and she walked in and boom, part was hers." And so
that's, she's great.
So he, a weird little, I wish Noel was here because, yeah, he could definitely tell you.
She's also a comedian. I mean, her timing is amazing. She was on that show W1A. Jessica Hines, who's a big comedian, she's in the show. And a guy called Jonathan Bailey, who was on Broadchurch and W1A. So it's Hooten and Lady in the cast of
TV
W1A.
Royalty. Now, you were also, people might remember you, because you were back in the day, you were on Superman, weren't you? The New Adventures of Superman?
I was. I was on a superhero show when it wasn't, when it wasn't cool to be on a fucking superhero show.
But for me, that is the only like Superman series that I register as real. Like, that was my childhood. I love that show so much.
That's so funny.
I wanted to be Terry Hatcher.
You did?
Yeah. It's dangerous when you're a kid and watching that show because you're like, "I'll just jump out a window. I can fly.
I'll do it.
I wanted to be a reporter." That didn't happen either. But you do a very good English accent. That was very good. I want to do a little challenge with you.
Are you going
to
do an American accent?
Do you want me to?
Yeah, you can. Let me hear it. What did you just say? Do you want me to? Do you want to go for a yogurt?
Okay. Give me something to say and I'll try and do it in American.
I'll tell you a word that everyone always says, like, it's tomato, tomato. You know what the word that we don't do together?
What?
The same? Yogurt.
Yogurt.
You say yogurt.
Yogurt.
Yogurt. Yogurt.
Of yogurt.
But yogurt.
Why do you say yogurt? It's like yogurt.
I didn't hit it. I just say yogurt. But you go to Valley Girl. Is that what you can you do a Valley?
Like LA? Like California? Like totally like that? Yeah. That's good. I spent a little time in LA last year, so kind of thought that one
That's
out.
Great. That's very good.
But English. Let's go back to English. Because I'm a Londoner. I'm from South London.
From South London.
I am from Broccoli.
How
do you know Broccoli?
Shut the front door. I know Broccoli because I did a show here when we filmed in Broccoli. I've laughed.
I'm from
South
Broccoli.
Isn't there like an old dance hall there or some old...
Yeah, the Rivoli Ballroom.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we're like old schoolmates. I grew up in Broccoli in South London.
So you were trying to test my London knowledge.
I want to test your London
geography.
Slang. So if I'm going to throw you some slang words, I'm going to see if you can translate what you think that they might mean. So,
minge. Sorry.
Do you know what that is?
I do. You know what? I love that The In-Betweeners? That kid with like the clunge mags and... sorry, I'm being naughty.
Minge is one of like my favourite words.
Give me a word.
Okay, what about peak?
Peak.
Yeah, what do you think peak means?
Like we've peaked, it's... I don't know.
It's an uncomfortable situation. Peak. So like, this is peak. This is peak.
Oh.
You can bring these back to America and you can teach everyone.
Maybe not.
Okay.
I'm joking.
Yard.
Yard?
Yard.
Well, a yard in America is like money.
Oh, is it?
Like, what do we call a yard? It's like $1,000 or something, right? Or 100,000?
Wow.
A yard? A couple of yards?
Well, yard here is your home. Your yard.
Your yard.
This is my
your
yard.
Crib.
Yeah.
Your yard. You're hitting me with some young good.
Yeah, this is the current.
I threw minge.
Okay, what about if something's dead?
It's fucking dead. No, if something's dead, it's dead. It's not happening. It's not going on. Nothing's happening
yeah,
right
no,
now.
Yeah, it's poor quality. So
poor quality. This is dead.
This is like, you know, yeah, sorry, mate, your jacket's dead. Like,
wow, give me some more. Shit.
What
dead.
Is what's whip?
Your ride. Your whip. Your car, right?
Yeah, okay. Maybe that's the same one. Okay, cool. What about fam? What is a fam?
Your family? No. Your friends?
It's a close friend.
Your close friends, my fam.
And a final one, what does peng mean?
Peng.
P-E-N-G. Peng.
Peng. We have a thing, what we call peng is if you have a moment that you go, fuck, I shouldn't have said, there's like a peng in your stomach or like a peng.
No, it's if it's nice looking. So if you see like a really hot girl, be like, oh, she's peng.
She's peng. But
she's
what, peng. Explain that. You just made that up. Why?
I did not make that up.
Why is the good-looking girl peng?
100.
What makes her peng?
I don't know. What, these kids on the street, they just like twist words.
Look at her.
Stuff.
She's peng.
Yeah.
Or she's paying for dinner.
Paying.
That's how we would say
she's
peng.
She's so peng, I'm paying.
She's peng. Fuck.
Yeah, no,
okay.
Well done.
Those
you did
are
well.
Very... I didn't do well at all. I did extremely...
I was so impressed that you knew minge. That's amazing.
That's a bit naughty.
That's amazing. There's what an actress in Hollywood who got Minge tattooed on her foot.
Did she? Maybe didn't know well.
She didn't quite. It was Amanda Seyfried. And she said she was on set with Colin Firth and he kept saying Minge. She kept swearing, Minge. And so she loved it so much she got it on her foot. And then now she does red carpets and there's Minge on her foot.
There's Minge on her foot.
Well, we have a lot of swear words over here that maybe don't translate. Like, we say bugger a lot.
Like, oh, bugger, like, oh, bugger. Oh, bugger. That's like bugger. A Hugh Grant movie as well.
Oh, yeah, he says it a lot, yeah.
You say bollocks.
Oh, bollocks, yeah.
You say the C word a lot. The C word in England seems very normal and it's less offensive, but in America people get offended by
it. No, it's still pretty offensive here.
Is it?
Yeah, not really used much on TV or anything. But go down a pub, it's everywhere.
They don't even say it. They go, you fucking cunt.
Just whisper it.
What about mingin? You guys, that's an mingin. Irish thing.
Yeah? Oh, that's right? So mingin. Yeah.
Well, all those, so I'm from New York City, so you'll have, okay. When you come from different, if you're not in like a posh, you know, thing, little I think area. You come up with your own little slang
words.
Or isms.
I invent words sometimes. I said ferocious once, and I meant like horrendously ferocious, and it just came out as ferocious.
But ferocious is a good word.
So I kept that. I was like, oh, it's just ferocious, that situation. It's like Shakespeare. He made up words all the time.
I think they made up Shakespeare.
Are you a fan of Shakespeare?
Bill? William?
Old Bill? Old Billy Bill?
Shakespeare?
There's a rumor that he was actually a woman, but writing under the male name.
Wilhelmina?
I mean, that would make sense, I think.
All those feelings that he was writing
about?
It's
pretty much just PMS in a play, isn't it? Just like, I hate you!
Do you go to Shakespeare?
I do. At the Globe, they've got this really good deal where you can go. It's like a fiver all the time.
For a fiver? That's the Columbus Road flower market. You can spend a fiver. I have a little fam in England. I have some good friends here, yeah. Do you know who Dexter Fletcher is?
Yes.
He's the voice of McDonald's. The Big Mac McFlurry. You've not heard, every time you listen to McDonald's, it's Dexter.
How do you know Dexter?
We did a play.
Did he get free
in
McDonald's?
In 2004. He doesn't get free McDonald's.
Oh, me. You'd think, as the voice of McDonald's, you'd be able to walk in and be like, I'd like
But I
a
think
burger.
They pay him and he can buy some McDonald's if he wants.
That's not as fun,
Where do you
it?
Get a good burger? You guys are all big about your lobster burger thing. What's going on? Where do you get a good cheeseburger if you're... Five Guys, isn't it?
Five Guys. I get free burgers at Five Guys.
You do?
I did an interview once and I accidentally made a huge tit of myself and made a big sexual innuendo when I was interviewing someone and it went viral and Five Guys offered me free burgers.
Five dudes offered you free burgers?
Five dudes.
Or Five Guys the place?
Five Guys the place. Yeah, that was the mix-up. I was talking about Five
you
Guys.
You were thinking Five Guys.
The burger place and they thought I was talking about five men of mine.
Uh-oh.
But never go lower than seven, so it's fine.
Johanna.
Okay, so back to...
What else can we talk about?
Hooter and the Lady a little bit more. Because it's starting tonight. Have you actually seen... How many...
I saw, like, the first two. We go to Rome in the second one. The first one's in the jungle. We go to Egypt, Russia, Cambodia. It's just good, fun escapism. We do a lot of stunts. We were up on the stunt team, do a lot of the Tom Cruise movies.
Okay.
And Tom Cruise picks the safest people in the world. I felt in good, safe hands. So we did more stunts than I ever have. Wow. And they pushed us further than we ever did. We did fights on helicopters.
Did you hurt yourself? They,
emotionally.
emotionally damaged.
No, you get hurt a little bit, but they don't let you do everything because there's insurance and stuff. You have to
precious.
Come back the next day. I'm not precious.
You got
to
keep your face intact.
I guess. I don't know.
I'm going to start watching it, and that's actually quite big. Normally, I just stick to Netflix. Got any upcoming projects, like next in line, where you're
I
going
I did a film
to...
with Matthew McConaughey called Gold. It's a...
Oh, my God.
That's coming out on Christmas Day in America. I don't know when it's coming out here.
Okay.
It's a big drama. It's about the largest gold scandal in the history of the world, I think.
The history of the universe.
It's kind of gold, money, greed. But it was written and directed by the guy that did Syriana and won the Oscar, and he wrote Traffic and won the Oscar, Stephen Gagan.
It's
so it's
like
a good proper...
Proper serious chunky.
And McConaughey's great. He gained all this weight and lost his hair. He's like, great. He's going to... I think he'll get nominated for another Oscar.
You said that with, like, a nice amount of...
No, he's amazing. I think he's great.
No, I think he's fun.
And
he kind of came out of nowhere. He was, like, killing the, you know, the rom-coms and all those kind of films. And then just out of nowhere, boom.
He did all those romantic comedies, and then he moved to Austin, and he took a little break.
And then
the phone stopped calling for a while, and then all of a sudden you become a new idea.
And
he came out, and he did a couple of movies before Dallas Buyers Club that were great.
Yeah.
Mud and Magic Mike, too. That's what happened. That was the first movie. I think Soderbergh called him, and he came and did that. He works hard.
Do you play, like, a goodie or a baddie or a...
I just play... I play a banker, a New York banker that
baddie.
Goes... No. that goes to Indonesia to verify that what they found is really gold. Okay. And it turns out to not be really gold. And I look like probably an asshole. But it's all set in the 80s. I had to pretend more to,
I'd love to
travel with a Walkman.
I love that part of acting because I'm an actress as well. And like when you get put on set and you have to pretend that you're an expert at something, I'm like, yeah, I can totally fly this helicopter. Thank you so much. I know you had a really super busy day.
I won't be getting in a helicopter with Johanna. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's amazing to meet you. And I can't believe that you're from my hometown. Well, I'm from my hometown.
Dance Hall, River House, whatever it's called.
Okay, we need to stop here because this is getting dead. Okay.
Yo, half your man, them a locked up pistol, running butch. Them cold ass nights from the strip, never done him good. Ride for my team and I ride like my brothers would. And we don't do friends round here, man, it's brotherhood. We don't do friends round here, 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 it's brotherhood. Yeah, welcome to hell. Bring your G-man, he's welcome as well. Tell police to release for my team, do it ASAP before I come felt on myself. So tell me, why'd you draw me out? I keep on guard when I walk about. Old school beef for some old school use, but I'm real old school. I'll sort them out, I just done some things that I never intended. Fucked up sheets, that's fucked up beef, that's never been ended. I won't act like I've never been tempted. Grab my gun and go to war. To grab my gun with no remorse. To catch the ute and blow my torch. To kill the prick and go to court. Who cares who you done back then? Round here, young G's don't think twice. Come to your block with a Big Mac 10. Yo, fuck boy, should've stayed inside. Man, don't care what your name on the road. Don't come round here thinking you're tough. We don't care what you done in 06. Just know real niggas pull your bluff. Yo. Half your man, them a locked up pistol, running butch. Them cold ass nights on the strip, never done him good. Ride for my team and I ride like my brothers would. And we don't do friends round here, man, it's brotherhood. We don't do friends round here, 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 it's brotherhood.
We've got our guest. This is Jade Adams. Woo! In the studio.
Jade Adams!
Hi! Welcome.
How you doing?
I'm all right, mate. I was stuck in traffic, so I'm all like, I've got too much adrenaline because I thought I was going to be late.
Oh, we got...
Well, you're not. No, I've got to tell you something. I've heard that you're funny, the funniest person in the planet or something like that. So.
Something like that. So basically, what happened was
You better make me laugh today, is what I'm saying.
I had an interview, yeah. And they said, oh, tell us, for the uninitiated, who are you? And I went, well, a humble answer is that I'm just a lowly cafe worker, just with dreams of making people laugh. To anyone else, I'm Britain's funniest woman. Oh, no, I said, I'm the answer to British comedy. And then that got taken as the thing, so now I can use it as a quote, mate. So, yeah, that's Britain's PR, mate, that is.
That is PR. I love that. I love that.
But apparently I'm quite funny. I just...
I'll be the judge of that.
I have funny bones, apparently.
I got a funny bone.
Have you? Mm. Have you got a funny bone? Yeah, mate, you got to stop doing that. It's all kinds of.
I got a funny bone.
He hits on my mum. It's kind of a problem.
Yeah, my mum loves it.
But she like a right upper, I bet.
Yeah, she loves it.
I love how big king size
Snickers right upper. She loves it.
Does she?
This is king size Snickers with nuts. Yeah.
This has taken a turn
for the better.
Yeah.
Yeah, FUBAR. It stands for fucked up beyond all recognition.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So you could take in any old riff raff here, really.
We can just go and look at the.
Not
symbol.
On this show. We only take quality on this show. Girl.
Thanks, mate.
That's why you're here.
Thank you. That
quality
is
industry. Peeps.
Quality, apparently. Where I'm from, you don't really sit around bragging about yourself like people do on the internet. So when I'm in these things where I'm in for 15 minutes and I've got to make people come and see my show, I find it ever so uncomfortable to just say, yeah, I'm real funny. I tell you what you won't do is you won't be bored for an hour.
So what is your show about? Because you've got a show at the Soho Theatre.
I'm
around there all the time.
Come, mate. It's well funny. It's about... Basically, it started off as I didn't want it to be what it was about. And then over the preview period that I did for from March to July, it turned into a show which was where I basically spent 31 years of my life trying to be other people, thinking that other people knew what the route to happiness was. And then I realised at 31, having done this show, that actually I knew what it was all along, and that was to be me. Mm. And that doesn't mean people have to be me, because I don't like that. I don't like it when people
copy. Was quite, it's a one laugh. I'm just write that down, one laugh.
Yeah. One tick.
Write that one tick.
Done.
No one should copy. You should just be yourself. That's what I think anyway. And I think that happiness comes from being yourself.
Indeed.
Being you.
However that is, and not trying not to worry what other people think about you.
Yes.
Which I spent all my life doing, because I had some stronger female role models that liked to dominate me when I was growing up.
Oh,
it sounds
you?
Saucy, doesn't it?
It yeah. does.
Family members. I know I'm West Country. I'm not that West Country.
two.
Just
make a note of that. That's two, though.
excuse me, chest infection just gone. I had the same thing as the Dreamgirls girls had.
Oh, wow.
Oh, because the show got shut down,
yep.
Didn't it?
I had the same illness.
Did you give it to him?
I think I did.
Stop snogging all the cast of Showgirls.
Hold on.
So
three, that's three. That was three.
That one from Glee is worth it.
Who's in there from Glee?
I don't know. I just saw her singing and I thought maybe she's in it, but I'm not. I don't imagine that girl's in the West. Maybe she is. I haven't seen her do any work since Glee.
No, me neither. No,
she got the. It's the black girl in Glee. She's sort of my size with big old fro.
No, she's done nothing since Glee.
She played Mercedes, didn't she?
Fuck all apart from now she's in Dreamgirls.
She's very good voice.
Yeah, she's got a good voice.
Do you sing?
I do, yeah. I sing opera. This chair wants to move around.
In the show? Do you sing in the show?
Mate, I have an ongoing battle with these chairs, so just be careful, mate. They're the enemy.
I am. I do sing in the show, but not until the very end, which has ruined the ending. But you still won't expect it, because I take you on a roller coaster. It's full of stuff. I've just jam-packed my show with as much as I could. There's dancing, singing. I lip sync at one point. I beatbox. I rap.
Wow.
I can do the splits.
Shut up.
Yes, mate.
I love that.
I was a dancer for 12 years.
Fantastic.
Some people call themselves a triple threat. I am an octuple threat, which has actually no relation to the fact I look a little bit like Ursula from The Little Mermaid.
You don't look like
Thanks,
her.
Mate.
That's a half laugh there. I'll give you that.
Four and a half.
No, three and a half, love. Don't get flat at yourself. Three and a half.
Yeah. Fucking hell.
Three and a half. But she's only been on like 2 minutes. That's brilliant.
That's brilliant. That is brilliant.
2 minutes? Is that it?
I don't laugh much. So that is brilliant.
No, honestly.
I don't.
If something's funny, he just goes,
Yeah. They'd be like fucking they're belly rolling on the ground. I'm like,
Is that because you think you're funnier than everyone else?
I'm mildly amusing.
Yeah, it's because you're the class clown, ain't you, mate?
I'm mildly amusing.
It's uncomfortable for you to
have
someone.
No, it's not uncomfortable.
Not uncomfortable, that's the wrong word, because look at him, he got defensive. What I meant was. It's not uncomfortable. Four. It is. You had one there, didn't you?
Yeah,
truth is always funnier than anything else. My show's very brutal as well. I'm quite honest in it.
Good.
I swear the audience to secrecy when they come in about something. I say some stuff and I swear them all to things that I would never put on telly or on radio.
Yeah.
I wouldn't ever say it, but on stage I give some stuff over to the audience that they're not allowed to, like reviewers as well. I tend to shut the fuck up at the end.
Good.
If they didn't like it. However, funniness. You were probably very funny at school, which is why you went into the world of the dramatics. You were hilarious in Doctor Who, mate.
Thank you.
I was a massive fan of when you were in it. I didn't watch it so much when Matt what's his face left, but when you were in it, it was brilliant.
Yeah, when I was Billy and Mickey and all that.
I know him as Rose, babes.
Rose, yeah.
Rose and Doctor. That's pretty much
Rose and Doctor. Yeah.
It kind of. I don't think they ever really recreated anything.
I don't
pass.
Think that they did it as well as they did it when they did it then.
Yeah, babes.
Yeah.
Billy should have stayed in it and not done that stripper thing.
Oh, I didn't mind that though because she had her bits out.
She is well fit in that stripper show.
Mm-hmm.
She's all right.
But she's better as Rose.
Oh, totes. Yeah.
You guys.
What if Rose was a stripper? In fact, you know, there's some fan it's YouTube videos on YouTube. Of Rose from Doctor Who doing like basically mashed
in
Doctor Who and Secret Diary of a Cool Girl, because there's a scene where she has sex with Matt Smith because he's in Doctor Who and that, so they mash it together.
Oh.
I'm that much of a fan.
Google that, kids.
I used to read fan fiction for Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And
did you write it as well?
No, I didn't write it.
So for people that don't know, fanfic is when fans write stories, episodes of their favourite shows or second favourite shows,
like
and
Harry
have
Potter.
The characters fucking and doing all sorts of craziness, and people love it.
Yeah. I was always spit roasted by Spike and Angel in my fanfiction.
Really?
No, I didn't write it. I just thought that would be funny.
That is funny. That's mildly amusing.
It's mildly amusing.
That was mildly amusing.
You didn't laugh. No. You just told me it was funny, which is what you always want as a comedian.
That was funny.
There you are.
I just
funny.
Marked that down. That's five.
It's like, does he do this with all the comedians?
I think so.
No, but you're the funniest ever.
Funniest person ever?
Yeah.
I'm quite funny. Do you know what I did today? On New Year's Eve, I am doing two things. I'm doing Soho Theatre with Bourgeois Maurice, who are a great sort of cabaret double act.
Mm.
Then I'm going to the Eagle in South London, and I'm dressing up. So Scotty, who's a drag performer that I work with, he is doing a show where basically everyone who's died over 2016 is getting recreated in this show at the Eagle.
It's a lot of cast.
I'm Victoria Wood.
Oh.
I put the wig on today. I look just like her.
Oh man!
I was doing all the hand actions as well. Let's do it. I was doing it. It was great.
And that will be great. How do you feel about it? Because she was someone that was really, I guess, a pioneer in your
lady comedy.
In your
she was. Yeah,
business.
She's great. I loved her. I watched Acorn Antiques and Dinner Ladies, and I watched all her stand up, and I watched. Her sit down because she was at a piano, but she was great.
Was, yeah.
She was, you know, she is a pioneer of ladies' comedy, which is great. I'm a bit funny about the old ladies' comedy. I just tend to do comedy. I don't really sort of.
It's not ladies' comedy. It's just comedy.
It's just comedy, mate. Yeah. I'm just funny. I happen to have a vagina.
Yeah. I'm sure it's a very pretty one too.
It is absolutely lovely.
Can I have a look?
You can.
After the show, we're doing work now.
We'll Facebook live it.
Feel free, Facebook live.
Yeah. Can we? Who inspired you when you were a young comedian?
Dawn French, Jennifer Saunders, Victoria Wood did, Julie Walters, and then I watched a lot of American stand up. So like George Carlin and Bill Hicks. I mean, every comedian says that. Louis C.K. I love Louis' sitcom.
Louis,
he's brilliant. Mm. But I love. My favourite stand-up's all American. All my favourite, like, proper, you know, not what I do, which is fuck-assing around with a load of bag full of props and shit. but, I, you know, like, what they do out there with it... Because my show is the first time I've done an hour of chatting as well, because a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to be, like, putting on different costumes. I stay in the same clothes all the way through the show, and I ain't Adele in it either. Because I do Adele. Well, I'm doing it tonight at the Glory in King.
Is that why you got your wig with you?
I had to bring it with me, and I panicked because I thought I was going to be late, and I was just dyeing it because it was too blonde.
That does look like Adele, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'd do it all right. Some trannies called me Adele when I moved to London 6 years ago, and not wanting to get any more jobs in call centres or serving smashed avocado on rye bread to children as young as four called Joffrey, I decided to start dressing up as Adele for cash.
It's not a bad shout.
No,
to be fair,
it's also the opening line to my show.
So, how did sort of the Soho Theatre come about then? How did it get from you having to start? I've got an idea to be funny in a show. How did you get it? Someone to commission it?
I went to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival 2016, smashed it in the dick, got nominated for best newcomer. Seven.
Seven.
Eight.
Nine.
On a roll.
like, I need to have a little king, like ding, 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 ding.
I got one. I should have bought it. I had it when I did a scissor kit to PJ and Duncan's Let's Get Ready to Rumble in the Bethnal Green Working Men's Club and fucked my knee up and did me ACL in.
Oh, flipping out. That's painful, isn't it?
When my mum was looking after me, she put the food on the other side of the room so I'd walk over and get it. She's a cruel bitch. And then she also gave me a little bell which she would just let me ring, almost like I was that guy in the wheelchair in Breaking Bad who's just about to kill Gustavo. Great reference.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
Good reference, ding, ding, ding.
So you got
So I got nominated for Best Newcomer, and then I didn't think I was going to get Soho Theatre because they weren't really, like, everyone else I'd seen had been given their spaces, and I was like, and then I was all like, oh, it's a class thing, it's because I'm working class, because there were a couple of reviews up in Edinburgh that sort of really annoyingly referred to me as crass or brash, and it's such a shitty thing to say just because I've got an accent and I'm not, and also I'm not like, I haven't you know, I don't have much fear when it comes to expressing myself. So yeah. I, you know, it comes when you're female, it comes across as someone who's a little bit
frank
or gaudy or something like that. So I had it.
When you're black,
babes. Working class is the new black, mate.
Yeah, and when you're both of those things.
Oh, mate.
Yeah. Or female, of course.
You need to be fat and in a wheelchair now, mate.
Yeah.
And changing your sex.
Yeah.
And then
you will tick a lot of boxes. They'll commission a sitcom for you in a minute, mate.
Yeah. Oh, no, maybe I should try that.
Just go in a wheelchair, you'll be dandy.
I might try that.
Do it, write it down.
I'm going to make a note of that too.
I didn't think I was going to get it, and then they gave me 14 or 15 dates, which is quite a lot. Amazing. For someone
That's
who
a lot.
Didn't win Best Newcomer.
Yeah.
But was nominated for it, and it's been selling really well. I've sold out the last three that I've done, and I think Tuesday might be, I'm not so sure, but I think it's very close to getting sold out on Tuesday.
So you're at the Soho Theatre. How long are you running for?
So I've now got a run from next Tuesday to Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, so the 20th to the 23rd, I think it's four dates. Then I come back from Christmas. I'm doing the 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th.
Oh, great. In between.
And then I've got another run from the 3rd to the 7th of January as well.
So you are around. So if people want to find you,
they can come watch. It's funny. They'll enjoy it. It's not. I don't mention like my relationship status really in it at all. And I don't like. I don't moan about not having a boyfriend or anything like that. I don't. It's more about me being a person and me being a bit of a dickhead, really. Which is
that
what you want.
Good, yeah.
I think what you want from someone who's going to make you laugh.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
This chair is mental.
Yeah, she's turning. She's now facing the other way.
There you go.
Complete rotation.
There's a war on chairs, mate. Just watch it.
Am I meant to ask you guys questions?
No.
Well, we are slightly out of time because we're coming towards the end of the show and we've got to move on to our film reviews. But thank you so much for coming in.
What film is it?
Well,
loads. Just be careful of that chair.
Just name me a film and I'll tell you what I think.
Star Wars.
Love it.
Rogue One, Star Wars.
Oh, I ain't seen it, mate.
10, by the way.
Thanks,
brilliant,
mate.
You got 10 laughs in 10 minutes. That's amazing.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jade, for coming in.
Right,
and her show is on now and will be going until the 7th of January.
All right.
Watch it.
Thank you so much. We'll see you in the new year.
Yeah, it's crazy in the dungeon. You know, it's crazy in the dungeon. It's so crazy in the dungeon. Going crazy in the dungeon. Yeah, it's crazy in the dungeon. You know, it's crazy in the dungeon. It's so crazy in the dungeon. Going crazy in the dungeon. A verse from me's like a half a brick. Album in the charts and shit. I guess I ain't underground anymore unless I'm in my car, cause my parking is. You're always going to Dubai.
Yeah.
And we all know the reason why.
We know.
You ain't even gonna lie.
Stop it.
Baby girl, live your life. When I pull up in a ride, they're all snapping on a slide.
Yeah.
Your friend blocking like a midfielder. You should see her nose of how the dog feel. Or I do it right, then you'll do it wrong. They don't know your songs, you should move along. You buy these girls new Louis Vuittons. I just give them D with my fumes on. It's all crazy in the dunya. I got the gift of the gab.
Yeah.
I give a dick in the fly.
Hey.
Then tell her dip in the cab.
Yeah.
Fill up a spliff on my lap.
Hey.
P got the stick in the bag.
Yeah.
I put my beats on the map.
Yeah.
These niggas don't live where they rap.
Yeah, it's crazy in the dunya. You know it's crazy in the dunya. It's so crazy in the dungeon. Going crazy in the dungeon. Yeah, it's crazy in the dungeon. You know it's crazy in the dungeon. It's so crazy in the dungeon. Going crazy in the dungeon.
Yeah. I wear the bumper cloud. Treat the merc like a bumper car. You're talking reckless on a gram or Twitter. Hit you, turn you to a tumbler. Bring a rapper, I could be for it. White girl, she a freaky thing. But she cooked the chicken, no seasoning. Ah, fuck it, order pizza then. I be on my hill shit. I be on my trill shit. I be on that spend that money quick, cause I just got another deal shit. Things sound like a drum roll. If they pull it out and let one go. Word to niggas from the sick side, there'll be nowhere to run to. Bangers can courtesy of EY. Nigga, we've been up 3 nights. Niggas keep on trying with the heave side. You little side man, you'll get deep fried. Play dirty, run the city now. In tailor suits, when I'm whizzing round. Cutting niggas off, got my scissors out. Why you snapping now? It's like 50 pounds. I could go buy Rari. I could even say Wallahi. I just saw my old principal. He saw the whip and said classy. Been 2 days, I made 50, nigga. Allow it, I can see a rolly ticking, nigga. Ain't sliding, sliding, who you tricking, nigga? Oh, you looking for me? Buy a ticket, nigga. I'm
gone. Yeah, it's crazy in the dungeon. You know it's crazy in the dungeon. It's too crazy in the dungeon. Going crazy in the dungeon. Yeah, it's crazy in the dungeon. You know it's crazy in the dungeon. It's too crazy in the dungeon. Going crazy in the dungeon.
You're listening to the best of Johanna James and Noel Clark on FUBAR Radio.
To the middle of the wall, gas pedal, mama makes my door. Feel that heat, let me pour kettle. Roll out like I Skype on bike. One drop, one shot, we hide like jackal. Bust that bullet, and we disable GPS, we can enable. Read about it on your Kindle. Rebels a dabble like an iTunes shuffle. Off with the signal on a drone missile. Muzzle your dogs when I step into the hustle. I'm queen of the east. Show me you go.